Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday. It's October 21st, and it's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. So this Friday's broadcast is a discussion conducted with New York State Assembly member who represents the 90th District, Nader Sayers. As seemingly incongruous as it may seem, many people are unaware of the people they may elect to office, and some follow the political party line. Others may focus on different attributes that define the candidate. And today we explore the responsibilities of office with New York State Assemblyman Nader Sayers, how he infuses his background as an educator, lawyer, family man, businessman, and all around erudite man. We explore what he has accomplished, how it has informed him, and how he has promised an agenda of service to the community and city he serves, how he has championed funding that benefits Yonkers and like communities throughout the state, and so much more that impacts the daily lives of people in the state. We learn how he has learned to walk the walk, talk the talk, but most importantly, we learn what he has delivered and whether he can share other ideas without breaching his concepts and integrity. So we'll hear him from 10 to 11 o'clock in the morning. He's running a little bit late, but it is just what it is. And what I wanted to see here, there are some issues that we want to bring up with him. So we're going to be covering stuff about sex, sex education in schools, economy, and quite a few other issues, all within the first hour. So I think it should be very, very compelling, to say the least. And speaking of compelling, none other than Nader Sayers. Good morning, sir. How are you? Hello?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Is this Nader?
No, this is Damon Jones.
How are you, Damon Jones? I haven't spoken to you in a million years. I hope you're well and happy.
Yes, yes. How are you?
Thank God I'm okay. I was in hospital, but I'm out, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. So it looks like I'll live another day.
No, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I was asked to call in your show for the law enforcement perspective of the menthol ban.
A law enforcement enforcement about what?
Perspective of the menthol ban that Westchester County legislators are proposing.
Okay. So tell me about it, because I'm really not familiar with it.
Oh,
you know, I'm sorry about my ignorance.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
No. It's okay. That's what we're here for. We're not here to do anything more, but to learn and engage.
I was asked by a partner of mine to give a call because he couldn't call in. And I don't know if you heard. So the Westchester County Health Committee is preparing to move forward on a menthol ban. They're going to ban all menthol cigarettes, and they say it's flavored, but the focus, our concern, is the focus on the menthol cigarettes. And
why do they suggest that it's best to outlaw them? Well, what's the purpose of that?
They want to save lives. They want to address the issue of smoking, especially in the Black community. And they feel that this ban will actually help stop people from smoking. Now, understand, they're just banning menthol cigarettes. They're not banning non-menthol cigarettes.
So what's the logic in that? Why is menthol more bad for your health as opposed to other cigarettes? Don't you die from both?
Exactly. because black people smoke 80 to 90% menthol. White people smoke around 80%, around the same percentage of non-menthol. The discussion of the county legislators, this is how we will save black lives.
If you want to save lives, then does one only save black lives as opposed to white lives, as opposed to Asian lives? So why don't we just ban smoking altogether if that's what they want?
Exactly. Well, that was.
So it does seem very biased. I mean, like, are they really helping black people?
Absolutely, absolutely not, right? Because number one, smoking is at an all time low. That's number one.
Uh-huh.
By the numbers. Number two, you could buy them. You could, if you live in Yonkers, you could drive down to the Bronx and buy them.
That's right.
Right?
And the same thing if you're in Mount Vernon.
Exactly. Number three, is that New York is the number one state in illegal cigarette sales.
Uh-huh.
Our argument from a law enforcement perspective, which they haven't talked to the DA's office, they haven't talked to alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, they haven't talked to the Chiefs, Westchester County Chiefs Association, these people in law enforcement have not came for them to testify. But as far as law enforcement, well, black law enforcement officers, you know, our organizations are saying you're going to feed the illegal sale of cigarettes.
Mm.
And you're going to create a demand for it, which will create more interaction between police and communities of color.
Uh-huh.
We're not promoting cigarettes. We understand the health issues with cigarettes, but this bill is biased in nature. And it shouldn't be. So you're going to tell black people that smoke menthol, you know, you're going to disrupt their lives instead of treating it as an addiction, because the nicotine is the addiction, and it's in both menthol and non-menthol. So you're going to disrupt lives of black people while white people in Westchester, the majority, can just smoke. Their lives are not going to be affected. They're just going to go smoke.
Mm.
So we are pushing back on the bill.
Well, do me a favor, if you don't mind, out of respect to our guest that's scheduled at 10 o'clock, Assembly Member Nader Sayers, is it at all possible for you to consider calling us at 11 o'clock when he'll be concluding? Would you mind that?
Yeah,
I can schedule you for Monday for a full hour if you'd like, but I can give you the full hour this at 11 o'clock today if that's okay.
You know what? Let's do Monday, Hezzy.
Okay, I'll send you the timeline of availability for Monday, and we'll get that done on Monday. Thank you so much, Damon.
Just so people know,
you're still publishing your print paper, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Black Westchester Magazine.
We could use a plug here and there. That would be nice.
Let's make it happen.
Okay. Then. All right. Excellent. Thank you very, very much. You just take care of yourself, and thank you so much for calling.
Okay. Thank you.
Be well, sir. Bye.
Well.
Okay. Let's just see. We've got a caller on the line. We'll see who's who.
Hello, Hezzy.
One second. Good morning, Nader Sayers. What a pleasure. Good to have you on this morning.
The pleasure is mine. Always a pleasure to be on the show, Hezzy.
And I'm sorry for the delay, because we got a call that we never expected. I've got one other call. I want to just find out what they want, and then we'll postpone them. So bear with me a moment.
Sure.
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Hello.
This is Hezzy talking. Did you have a question for Nader Sayers or something
else? I do have a question. Yeah. My name is Kent, for the assembly member.
Oh, okay. He's on the line now.
Okay. My name is Kent. I'm the president of the New York Association of Convenience Stores. And I was just wondering, the assemblyman has been a long time supporter of us. And I was just wanted to call about the potential smoking ban that Westchester County is debating right now. My association represents about 450 stores in Westchester and about 5,600 mm-hmm. employees. We sell over $40 million a year in flavored tobacco. And I was just wondering if the assemblyman thought that instead of an outright ban, wouldn't it make more sense to pass a law that's similar to New York City's that carves out menthol, mint, and wintergreen flavors in an effort to harmonize the region to protect small businesses and to keep crime at bay?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just heard from Damon Jones, who called a few minutes before unexpectedly to mention that the county was voting to ban menthol cigarettes and their rationale was that black people smoke predominantly menthol cigarettes and they want to ban that. But they're not banning all cigarettes, so it becomes a little bit incongruous and difficult to understand. So let me just see if Nader Sayers, I don't know if he's familiar with this item,
yes,
but then go ahead, sir.
Hello? Hi, has
yes,
the,
sir, go ahead.
You know, this issue's been basically debated and discussed on the state level. And recently, when we became aware that the Westchester County Board of Legislators were looking at legislation to ban flavored tobaccos, from my perspective, similar to the position I took on the state level, I was concerned about the ban. And in a nutshell, you know, to ban flavored tobacco, yes, has an impact on menthol cigarettes and the impact on one of the biggest clientels, you know, with menthol cigarettes is African Americans. It really was, in my opinion, unfair. And when you look at menthol tobacco, which includes, you know, pipe tobacco, which includes hookahs, you really have an impact on, you know, a major portion, large ethnic groups in Westchester and Yonkers and New York State and the country, specifically Middle Eastern, South Asian communities that rely on the hookahs, which is flavored tobacco. So mm-hmm. I myself took a very strong position that New York State, when we're approving cannabis and approving marijuana, and then try to take a stand on limiting or banning flavored tobacco, to me was wrong. So I wrote recently to the County Board of Legislators a very strong letter indicating that they should really, you know, pull back, research the issues a little bit more, look at what the state is doing. And as some of my, you know, colleagues in business have stated, that, you know, let's look at ways we can do the safeguards, we can protect in certain areas, but limit the ban if need be, or treat menthol and flavored tobacco similar to what we do with regular cigarettes, you know, where I think we all acknowledge that cigarette consumption is way down than it was. So the campaign we have, you know, over the last 20 plus years has been very successful to tell people, hey, you know, we can't ban you from smoking, but, you know, we can tell you that smoking is bad for you, the health consequences, you know, the potential illness and the diseases that occur. So from that perspective, you know, similar to alcohol, to cigarettes, I think we should also take the same policy with flavored tobacco.
Do you think that there will be legislation on the state level that would usurp the power of the county, or does the county have its own capacity no matter what the state level might do, whether it be the New York State Assembly or the New York State Senate? Is there a manner by which to proceed?
Well, if you have state legislation that bans, that oversees, you know, local jurisdiction on the matter,
mm-hmm.
and that's why, you know, my recommendation and some communications I've had with some of the county board of legislative members was to really, you know, continue the discussion, continue to get input, but really rely and kind of tie in to the state discussion on flavored and vaping and whether mm-hmm. to ban, restrict, or modify. And that's the position I've taken, that, you know, for Westchester to do its own ban, really, as your previous speaker stated, people in Yonkers and Westchester can go into the Bronx, go into the city, you know, so that's the type of thing we're trying to avoid, where, you know, you have a black market, you have illegal activity, and at the end of the day, you're not really limiting the utilization. So I would focus more on trying to tie into a statewide uniform policy where mm-hmm. municipalities as well as the state have common agendas, common law. And again, I wouldn't restrict, you know, whether it's the hookah utilization or the pipe smoking or even menthol cigarettes. As we stated, mm-hmm. you know, the situation is less than it was many years ago, you know, but again, you know, for us as a state to say, hey, you know, we're going to legalize cannabis and marijuana, but we're going to restrict menthol cigarettes, to me, doesn't make sense.
And what about one other thing with respect to the business people who, if the state disallows and if the county disallows the sale of hookah products and as well as menthol cigarettes, aren't they also hurting the small businessman who's selling that? Is there any way to balance that out?
Well, you're right, and that's the biggest concern I have also, is that, you know, people that have legitimate businesses follow procedure. They sell it to, you know, to adults, for example. They monitor sales. You know, they comply. So if you take mm-hmm. away and you put these people out of business that are running legitimate, you know, businesses and following procedure and policy, all you do is you allow the sales to go illegally. And that's where the black market, because people will find ways to continue to, you know, not only produce and disseminate, but to buy the products. So you're putting mm-hmm. legitimate businesses, and you're allowing a black market where people are going to end up paying more. There's going to be more illegal activity, and the state loses out, and the communities lose out on tax revenue and doing things the proper way. So I agree that this is bad for legitimate local businesses, whether New York or Yonkers or elsewhere. And it's a loss when it comes to people, it comes to costs, it comes to doing things in a legitimate manner.
Bear with me one moment, Assembly Member. Let me just ask the caller that's been online, who is a businessman and sells, flavored cigarettes, if he's got any more questions or a statement he'd like to make. Sir, you're listening. Your line is open. Do you want to say anything more? Well, evidently so.
Are you talking to me?
Hello.
Yes. The one. This is Kevin. Appreciate. Yes, I appreciate what the assemblyman just said, and I agree that, you know, to ban these types of cigarettes is unfair. Business practice is unfair to small businesses, and really, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Just outside, within 5 miles of Westchester County, there are hundreds of places people can buy their menthol cigarettes. So it's not really going to have an impact. And in fact, Massachusetts passed a similar law, and all that they did was send business to New Hampshire and Rhode Island. So, you know, mm-hmm. what the Assemblyman said about cessation working is correct. The smoking rates for youth and adults are at the lowest point they've been ever. And my members, they ID and they take the law very seriously. So in order to keep crime down and to keep folks participating in cessation programs, we should leave everything alone. And if we do have to make an effort or make a change, it should be consistent with the region, like what New York okay. City did. So I really thank you, Assembly Member.
My pleasure.
Well, thank you for your call as well, sir. Ken,
thank you, sir,
for calling in. My pleasure. Be well. Bye-bye. We'll put you on hold if you want to hang on, but oh, no, that's fine. So he's gone. Well, thank you for being so magnanimous, Assembly Member Sayers. This was unexpected, but I appreciate that you're not only aware of it, but you have a perspective which is very, very salient. Well, one of the things that I find really interesting is, first of all, you have a great deal of knowledge as a family man, as an educator, as now in political office, and as a lawyer. How did all of those aspects inform you that you were capable of becoming a member in government? Because a lot of people, they salivate at being a member of elected office, but they don't have a clue on what to do, and they don't have the interest to follow up. They don't realize exactly what they're doing, but you're very proactive. You've been there, and you pass legislation you would think had already been done prior to your coming on to State Assembly, and yet they weren't done. So you have to say to yourself, at least I say to myself, my God, this guy is brilliant in every conceivable way, because you're able to hone in on that which is missing. And, you know, it's not like I want to applaud you, but you deserve applause for that. Because you have so many things, like the simplest little thing I remember, you came up with a concept that when you buy those gift cards, they expired after a certain time. I was like in shock that you even were aware of it. I certainly wasn't. I always thought that it was not the right thing to do, to send someone that you love or someone that interested you a gift card. I figured if you knew them well enough, then you would buy them something that you felt was appropriate. But neither here nor there, the fact that you're aware of it really exemplifies your capacity.
Well, Hazzy, I appreciate
it. How did it come about?
You know what? I often say that, you know, to be involved as a public official, you really need to, you know, be well-learned. You need to be very concerned and compassionate about your community. And you need to be, successful in a career. You need to first be a successful individual, you know, whether it's, and you need to show your commitment through volunteerism, involvement, as I have for 40 years on practically every board, every commission, volunteering as a president of the Board of Education, involved on hospital boards, chairing the Parking Authority, chairing many agencies, organizations. This was during my 35-plus years career as an educator, as a principal, as a president of the Board of Ed. And as an attorney, I understood how to research, how to look at legislation to see, you know, how can we change. And I often say to people, look, some of the best changes and recommendations came out of people speaking up saying, hey, I have an issue, I have a concern. But my next thing is tell me what the issue and concern, but tell me what you recommend we can do. We mean in, if it's something local or county or state or federal, what can we do to change that and make it better? And then honestly encourage people to speak up, to voice their opinion. And that's what democracy is all about. You know, we have an election November 8th. You know, I was elected in 2018 to the Assembly, Hezzy, and was reelected in 2020. And this is a reelection again every 2 years. And I tell people, hey, look at my track record. Look at what I've accomplished in less than 4 years. And then, you know, you have people running against you, people that, in my opinion, are career politicians, people that think the system owes them, people that, when you look at their record, they have zero accomplishments. They haven't legislated. They haven't sponsored any bills. They haven't promoted any positive change. But then they come out swinging with negative campaigning, with distortion of the fence, you know, and some of the stuff that my opponents really have said, you know, that is so ridiculous and so unprofessional. You know, you listen to that, and then you got to have an opportunity to come out and say, hey, to the people that are voting, to the general public, look at, it doesn't matter who the elected official is and who the opponents are. Look at, if somebody's been in office 11 years on the local level and has never sponsored one piece of legislation, and during the entire pandemic was away, you know, hiding on the Jersey Shore, why would you want to send somebody like that to Albany? But you know what they do? They go with the fear-mongering. They go with the attacks, you know, what I consider, you know, the ultra-right, Republican, leftist, you know, attack, and they they come out with accusations that are unfounded, that are really nonsense. And I tell people, look, become clear, understand the record, and realize, you know, don't be misled, you know, because distortion is the worst thing when,
What's very interesting is you bring about, like, you've got opposition running for office, for your office. However, what's very interesting is, like you said, that he hasn't been on the job at all. He's gone out using Yonkers gas, free gas, and he drives out to New Jersey, and that's where he's been staying all the time. And I know full well that his wife has approached somebody in government at City Hall and said that, well, in case my husband should lose, she wants him to have a job for $90,000. This worthless piece of crap. This is the extortion that they think is logical and pertinent. Not on my watch, because you know what? Outrageous. And I'm just not going to waste my time with him or anybody else like him and his wife. And I remember full well all the corruption that took place by his wife in the past when it was John Murtaugh that was the New York State he was a city councilman representing the district. And there was a lot of corruption then, too. So it doesn't go over my head because I've been around long enough to know everything these people do. They don't realize how much I know. I know more than I will ever say, but I won't forget. You know, I'm really disgusted by this behavior. And the thing to recognize is he hasn't passed any legislation whatsoever. So what the hell is he sitting there for? What is he doing?
He wants a job, you know. He wants to sit around and take me to Albany and change Albany. Meanwhile, you know, you've been in Yonkers for 11 years. What have you done in Yonkers? I look at my record in 4 years, has he, and the accomplishments of delivering for Yonkers, for education, for health care, for civic programs.
But, you know, people need to know, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're right. But the point is, when you went to Albany, and you brought down the money. The mayor of the city of Yonkers said, we need Nader Sayers because only job that is required of an assembly member or of a senator that goes up to Albany is to bring down the money. And you brought down the money. The city of Yonkers is flush with funding that we've never had before because you weren't there. That's the point. It's absolutely outrageous that this went on.
It's amazing. You know, I'm very proud of the record. I mean, you know, with delegation members and myself, $71 million just the last 2 years extra money for the Yonkers schools. That saves sports, that saves art and library and music programs, after-school programs, adult education, technology training. That also goes, you know, to the point that people that say to me, well, I have no kids in the public school system. Well, you know what? Whatever money you don't get from Albany, Yonkers taxpayers have to put the rest of it in there. So you keep taxes low and you avoid, you know, even people that don't have their own property and pay taxes. Everyone saves when you bring the funds down to Yonkers. And that's what I've done. And I'm very proud of that record. And then I get attacked on crime. Nobody has done more to fight crime than I have. You know, with my delegation members, the amount of funds we brought to crime prevention program, to addressing guns off the street, to passing legislation that basically takes away the right of 18-year-olds to buy body vests or to buy semi-automatic weapons. These are strategies that, in the end, put guns off the street. And I'm not talking about people that are legal gun owners that want to protect their homes and businesses. I'm all in favor of that. But the amount of illegal guns that are manufactured, that are put on the street, that cause the crime. And you know what? I'm an educator, Hezzy. When I, you know, God forbid, when you see these mass shootings and, you know, we see our children or citizens that are being shot down because of illegal guns. You know, the cry out there is, come on, guys, do something about it. You know, let's get the guns off the street. Moms Demand Action and all these groups that are historically fighting to remove guns. You know, this is the type of real effective legislation. You know what my opponent does? He brings up details about crime occurring in New York City, in Brooklyn, and elsewhere, and basically the fear-mongering of, you know, Albany or Washington is not addressing crime. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the data with crime in Yonkers, New York, and I say to my opponent, you're running against me. You're running against Nate Sayed. You know, you're running against my record. You're not running against, you know, Albany. You're not running for office in New York City. When I looked and I reached out to the police commissioner and others, and I look at crime and I look at murder during the last 2 years, murder down 57%, rape down 32%, shootings down 29%, gang-related, you know, crimes 45% down. You know, to me, in Yonkers, And I attribute this to, you know, the funding, the training we provided to law enforcement and police, the services that the state has provided to community agencies to work with young people, to educate them, give them jobs, to the school systems to make sure the support service programs and counselors and psychologists and social workers and education. This is the way you address. But my opponent comes out as if he's running for New York City, you know, and crime is on the upswing, not in Yonkers, New York. And it's,
you know what the problem, what the real problem is, and you hone in on the real issue. The real issue in Yonkers is that people from the police department have espoused that crime has gone down, but they never, ever proved it. They never come out with a monthly or quarterly report of what they've done, and that is to their own detriment, and that's why there's very little respect for a lot of the stuff that goes on, because we never know. We just hear numbers that mean absolutely nothing. And but just so people recognize on top of that, for example, we've got a school system that – instead of actually, you all have, all you have to do is you sign in once in the beginning of the year to access the computer system. And once you're there, they never have to see you again. You never have to even come in class. You never have to show up. You're allowed to come in for your breakfast and lunch, no problem, but you don't pass your grades, but you get passed along from year after year after year, and you know what? And the records of what people came in as far as testing scores are concerned and what they left with, totally, totally false, because it's all a lie. I got the proof, too. I've just been too busy, unfortunately, going to hospital back and forth the last few months, and I haven't had the time to write it. But you know what? I'm not going to let it go. As long as I live, I will make sure to get that out there. And you know what? People like Geraldine Feirstein, who is a proponent of bullshit and lies and deceit at the Yonkers Board of Education as their spokesman, is off the wall. Go prove your crap, as they say, because they haven't been able to prove it to me because I don't need you to prove anything. I've gone to the state to find out what the numbers are.
This is
the outrageousness, and that's why we're failing as a city on many levels. People don't respect the city because we don't come up with the credentials to prove that what we're saying is correct. And I'm outraged by it.
Why has the importance of disseminating information that's factual, that's truthful, that's all our mission, whether from the public
relations. Absolutely, but you do that. That's the reason I am so appreciative of your work, because you bring down the money. We're in a better position than ever. You're also on the gaming board as one of the people involved in gaming. It looks like we're going to get the approval for casino gambling, full
Correct.
Casino gambling in Yonkers. That's huge.
Well, that is
I know
huge.
Gary Pretlow is also involved. Of course, I think he's the chairman of that particular
committee that I'm a member of, and
exactly.
We lobbied hard. Yeah, we lobbied hard, you know, and that brings, in my opinion, a tremendous amount of revenue in jobs and for the economy, for education. Empire Casino for many years was given Yonkers schools automatically every year, $19.6 million. That really was necessary to fill the gaps that we have in our state-funded budget. And, you know, I've been a big advocate for changing funding formulas and making sure we get more money to build schools and renovate our schools. And anybody that knows our schools, many of them are over 100 years old. You know, they need renovation. We're short like 5,000 seats with a growing city, number three in the state now. Our enrollment is growing, and we don't have enough seats. So they've been historically taking away music rooms and gyms and art rooms, and I know that as a principal. See, whatever issues I address, I know firsthand, having been an educator, having been a principal, I know how education funds. I know how the services are given or taken away, and I know what we need to do to maintain and increase effectiveness in services. Healthcare.
Well, what's interesting about the casino is that not only are people in Yonkers employed by the casino, and more will be, but the impact of the casino being licensed here in Yonkers will also impact many people from the Bronx who travel to Yonkers and work at the casino. So the engine of employment is huge. And it's absolutely unbelievable the impact that it will have. And this is what people don't hear. And that's what they need to know. And
you know,
in order to rationalize what's going on.
But, Chazzy, I mean, something as simple as MGM, you know, in the casino, you know, the present 20 million. Imagine if automatically that was increased to 50 million. You know, that fills that shortfall with school budget. That allows us to keep taxes at bay, you know, allows us to keep water bills. I mean, water bills have been increasing, taxation increasing, and a lot of that under the watch of my opponent. And he has been, you know, to question and basically run a campaign against Albany, against Washington. And I say to him, hey, you know, you're running against Native Sayers. You know, you're running against my record. You know, you're representing Yonkers, New York. And look at what impacts, what concerns we have in Yonkers, not anywhere else in New York or in the city or the state or the nation. You're representing Yonkers, New York, or you're looking to represent. You know, what is your mission? What have you
done?
Well,
he doesn't have any credentials. He's never represented the district that he's supposed to represent as a city councilman. He's always absent. Give me a break.
And I'm just worried because, honestly, you have this extremism that is, you know, trying to mislead the public. They're ignoring women's rights, the right for women to choose. They're not focusing on education. They're not focusing on crime prevention and addressing the real sources of crime. You know, they're misleading people on what we're trying to do to keep illegal guns off the street. They're not addressing law enforcement with proper training and proper funding and support. You know, there's a whole list.
What about all the personal stuff? You know, I don't know about you, but I'm certainly of age, but thank goodness I don't have a problem with, you know, my bowels moving when I don't want them to, or urinating, but a lot of older people do have problems like that. And the point is they have to wear special diapers, and that used to cost a fortune of money. But you created legislation that serves our senior population. And it again, even that was not fully expressed well. And it's all of these things matter. When women have to pay more for a blouse than a man has to pay for a shirt, that's outrageous too.
That's
and,
true.
You know, there's so many things like that that make absolutely no sense. But when we have you in office, we know that we've got someone who's aware, who's knowledgeable, who can speak to the issue and make it and validate it to other people in the New York State Assembly. And then that gets caught up eventually on the New York Senate side, Senate side.
Well, you bring up a good point. I mean, this year the governor signed my Sayage bill exempting taxation on diapers, not only for babies, but as you said, for seniors, people.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that 5% tax saving on diapers, you know, really impacts a lot of families. When I talk to many mothers and people that, you know, you're talking about at least a third of the population that were crying out, you know, that were concerned about, you know, inflation, the economy. And people say, well, how do you address inflation and the economy? That really is on the minds of everyone in our country and state and city.
Yeah.
Serious. And it's, you know, the increase in gas costs. So, you know, we did it. We did an exemption on gas taxes to keep, the gas prices down, which was very helpful on diapers. We gave back at least $1,000 in tax rebates to all homeowners here in Yonkers, elsewhere throughout the state. I mean, these type of things that, you know, my delegation, my colleagues and I did, you know, that really truly addresses inflation, puts money back.
With all due respect, though, I'm sorry, but your office has been lacking in getting the information out. So it's got to do a better job because I'm aware of it because I'm interested, but a lot of people aren't aware of it. And so I think you need to tell your staff to get this stuff over to us instead of waiting once a week for their bullshit press release that goes nowhere and nobody sees. And this is unfortunately the process by so many other people in elected office because their staff doesn't know what to do. I know it very well. I've been doing this for 25 years, and I know exactly what needs to be done. But a lot of people, they just talk a good game and they don't deliver, including staff. But you've got pretty good staff, but they need to be focused in on exactly what they need to do, which is really unbelievable. So, and then also the thing that makes it very interesting with respect to you, again, is because you speak so many foreign languages, you have a capacity also to serve a good portion of the different ethnicities in the city. And we have a large population of different people from different countries who speak different languages and so on and so forth. But you've been very instrumental in connecting with the Arab world, of course, because you speak Arabic. And I think you also speak Spanish, don't you?
Well, I speak a little bit. Enjoy that. Okay. You know, have it as a principal. My student population and parents was predominantly Spanish-speaking at principal of school 13, you know, over the years. And I had the pleasure, and some of my family members studied medicine in Mexico, and, you know, they spoke Spanish fluently. And, you know, and
I know you've got
great
staff that speak Spanish very well.
You know, when you're
very,
able
very good.
A lawyer, a principal, when you're able to be multilingual and multicultural, you know, it's really a major advantage. You know, when your patients or your, you know, students or your parents, when they feel, you know, you understand them and you can communicate with them, it's a win-win. Because at the end of the day, when we expand communication and awareness and have an appreciation for different people, their cultures, their religions, their races. And that's what I've led the fight. You know, I've led the fight.
Well,
and
you know, you have led the fight. And when there was, when you, a couple of weeks ago, almost a month ago, you had like a re-election effort. The mayor of the city of Yonkers, Mayor Mike Spano, was there, and so many other people as well. But the thing that I found most impressive, I mean, really, it brought me to tears, to see a Muslim, a Jew, a Christian, and a Hindu. They were all there from the top of their sect, expressing their respect for you and what you brought forward. And the fact that you're able to bring people together. And what I took away from that moment, because of your upbringing, because of your interest in people and for their benefit, that people like this have gravitated to come together and were not afraid to be seen together either. Sometimes there's a lot of animosity between different sects of religion, but you brought them together. What an honor to see that.
To me, that was really an honor to, you know, I prize myself with respect and diversity, involved with the Seeds for Peace all over the world. I've gone to the conferences with, as you stated, with religious leaders from across the globe, and that are impacting what our feelings are here in Yonkers, in New York State. So when you take that initiative and you present and preach and advocate for harmony and coexistence, it really goes a long way. And everyone who was at the event really brought that to my attention and said, hey, we really appreciate the fact that you recognize the diversity in our city and you're able to bring the leaders of all the major religions together. And they led the event with prayers and, you know, special comments, and really set the tone for who we are or what we should be. We should be one people that are working together, lobbying for whatever is good for our city, our state, our nation. And that's where collaboration and reasonable mainstream legislation, not to be guided by extremism, whether on the left or the right. That's the problem, Hezi, in our nation. We've allowed extremism both ways to really take us off guard. That's why we have the polarization, we have the division, even to the point where, unfortunately, it's at the level of hate in some ways. And we're trying, or at least my agenda is, hey, come back to the middle, come back to the mainstream where you recognize our community is made up of hardworking people, of families, of, you know, many immigrants that had a long history, that achieved the American dream, that wanted to educate their kids and wanted to pay their respect for their community and do what's right. And, you know, having said that, do we have issues? Do we have the misinformed? Do we have the disenfranchised? Of course. But that's where we as government have to legislate. We have to identify where the needs are, where the sources of problems are, whether it's housing or mental illness or drug addiction or crime. Let's look at where the sources are. Let's address those sources. We can't close our eyes and say it doesn't exist, just throw everybody in jail. Find out what the solutions are. Find out what's causing the crime. Address it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it crime, people say, well, maybe Nader Sayed or others are soft on crime. Nonsense. Nobody's delivered more for protecting us and taking a strong stand to keep crime away, keep our streets safe. I've done it. I've done it repeatedly. That's my commitment. And when people tell me, you know, people that are violent criminals are on the street, I'm going to do whatever it takes from my end to make sure, whether it's judges have more discretion or should be given more discretion or law enforcement officials, we want repeat criminals and people that are intentionally going out, committing serious felonies, to stay in jail and off our streets. So, you know, I talk all the time, you know, put the rhetoric aside, put the nonsense aside, and start focusing on what is real, what is legitimate, and on a person's track record. And, you know, my campaign, you know, has been a pretty aggressive, visible campaign. In a couple of weeks, there'll be early voting. And honestly, I tell everybody out there listening, you know, this is a crucial time. It's a crucial election, especially in New York State, here in Yonkers, New York. And I tell people, you know, put the rhetoric aside. Look at the individuals you're supporting or the individuals you don't approve of, and look at their track records. And if they've accomplished, then you want them there to continue representing you. And if somebody has been unaccomplished and has proven a do-nothing attitude for 11 years, you know, why would you send them up to continue to represent you?
Well, that's a problem. A lot of people nowadays, they vote for an individual because of their sex. They'll vote for them because of the party that they belong to. And yet they know nothing about the character or the demeanor or the legislative capacity of the people that they elect. And this has become more and more prominent in the last maybe 20, 30 years in the country. And I don't know why, because it hasn't served the nation very well. So, you know, we've got to get to doing the work, and the work is heavy lifting. And you have to be knowledgeable and incisive and also aware. And that's what you bring to the table. So,
Tazi, you know, let me just say with, you know,
sure.
Possible final statement. I was reading this week an article in the Yonkers Rising. You know, the editor, Dan Murphy, the story on the safest cities in the nation. And I was impressed. I mean, this is a study done by Wallet Hub. It released the 2022 Safest Cities in America, and it involved 180 U.S. cities, and they had like 42 key metrics, you know, ways of determining the survey. And it's amazing how Yonkers, you know, in so many categories with traffic fatalities and law enforcement numbers and the numbers of assaults and uninsured and natural disasters, who's fully vaccinated. I mean, many key items. And, you know, we're like in the top in all these categories. And, you know, that's why when I listen to my opponent talk about, you know, crime and promoting fear, you know, I feel safe in Yonkers. And does that mean, you know, we back away from crime? Absolutely not. You know, my attitude is stay positive, address the issues, fight to change and address the core of the issues. And that's what we're doing, Hezzy. And but I appreciate the opportunity whenever to come on your show and have a chance to speak to the public at large. And again, you know, as the early issue, the individual that had a question about vaping and about Westchester County and tobacco, you know, but that shows you that as a public official, you got to be well aware of what the issues are. And, you know, I was happy to have contributed remarks and statements to that topic because, you know, it's going today. It's an issue on the county level, impacts Yonkers in the state, and voice my opinion early on, put the County Board of Legislators and others on notice what my opinion is. And I'm, you know, I'm the guy that will take a stand, you know, but it'll be based on facts, it'll be based on reason, and it would be based on what's in the best interest of Yonkers, our constituents, and the people we represent. And that's our job as legislators, you know, to do that.
Well, except that most people just would like the job, but they don't do the work. So that's the difference between you and so many others in the past, and many that would like to vie for your position under falsehood. So, well, it is just what it is. So how do people get in touch with your office if they have issues or they have concerns? How do they get in touch?
You know, the assembly office is at 35 East Grassy Sprain Road, you know, off Tuckahoe Road, in the assembly office for many years. The number there is 914-779-8805. And my staff, if there's an issue, to call the staff, to leave your name and number. If it involves issues or legislation, you know, we're trained to study the legislation. If it's an issue, the city agency or a county, state, or even federal, you know, we built liaisons because I'm a big advocate of intergovernment collaboration. And if something that, for example, we can help a constituent that involves the city of Yonkers matter, you know, we'll reach out. We'll reach out or hook the person up with the proper department, proper agency. This way things get done. So many individuals that had problems with unemployment claims, small business applications, you know, we followed up and tried to help them, you know, with the state. Individuals, for example, professionals that wanted to start a business, or sometimes even we had a young man who was a new chiropractor who passed his exams, was ready to open his business, and then the state was delayed because, I guess, for various reasons, and given this individual, you know, his credentials so he can open a business and start billing and do things the legal way. And meanwhile, they're saying, oh, it takes 16 weeks or more. And I'm saying to myself, if there's a legitimate business or there's a professional who's looking to start a business and start collecting tax revenue and delivering necessary services, why should there be a 16-plus week delay? You know, so in these matters gets involved, and we reach out to the source and say, come on, what's the delay? You know, this is something important for the community. This is a service that we need. Why delay it? You know, so if people had, for example, sometimes an immigration-related matter, we have a liaison from the congressional office that works, you know, comes to my assembly office representing the Congressman Bowman, and this individual is a specialist on immigration. And for cases where there's unnecessary delay or there's a really a hardship matter, you know, we'll get involved and, you know, and we'll hook up the federal with the state offices and say, hey, let's work together. How can we help? That's what it's all about, Hezzy. When you take on the role at any level of government to be a representative of the people, you got to represent the people. You got to give your full effort. You got to give your dedication. You can't take it lightly. You know, you can't mislead the people. People know. When I hear people say, hey, this person has represented me for many, many years, and they never get back to you, they don't care about constituent services or concerns, you know, that's a message in itself. That shows you the do-nothing attitude, and it shows you that, look, you know, do you trust someone representing you who has that historical style? Absolutely not. You know, that's mm-hmm. the bottom line. Constituent services, understanding legislation, delivering the resources for the people you represent, the city, the communities you represent. And to me, I'm proud that in less than 4 years, I can look at my record and say, you know what, whatever was possible, I took it to the full extent and I delivered for Yonkers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank goodness for that. So when is the campaign going to end? When is the voting taking place? Do people have to register early?
But there's early voting. You know, we passed a lot of voter reforms that makes it easier for people to vote.
Yes.
Of course, people will cry out and sometimes try to limit people's opportunity to vote. You know, and that's all fear-mongering. I really think
mm-hmm.
the American democracy, our voting process, is a good process. I think to a large extent, it's very effective and it's really reflective of how people feel. So that's why, you know, the main ingredient is not only voicing your concern as a person, as a constituent, but also practicing your right to vote. You know, for someone
mm-hmm.
that complains, sits back and doesn't participate, doesn't vote, I really tell them bluntly, you don't have a right to speak up. If you don't vote and you don't practice your democratic right, you don't have a right to speak up, you know, but be well learned, you know, understand what the issues, understand the candidates, and at the end of the day, you know, practice your right to vote. Early voting starts typically 10 days before November 8th, I believe on October 29th, where in Yonkers, people can vote at the Wills Library, they can vote at Larkin Plaza, and they have the full registration of all voters, for example, in Yonkers. So people have the opportunity for absentee ballots if they're away in school, if they're old, if they're sick, if they're unable to go vote in person, you can apply for an absentee ballot. So between early voting, where you can go to Wills Library or Larkin Plaza, or through absentee ballot, or Election Day, November 8th, to go out and vote at your regular voting booth, you know, that's a lot of opportunities. So I tell people, vote early. God forbid, you don't want to be stuck where you wait for the last moment and something comes up where you miss your opportunity to vote. So voting is accessible. It's available. Somebody has an issue where they can't vote, you know, they can reach out to our committee. They can always, you know, give us a call. On our literature, we've been disseminating literature, and it has contact information as to how to reach out to the campaign committee. So we're there. We're there to make sure democracy works at its best. We're there to make sure everybody has an opportunity to vote. And at the end of the day, we're there to celebrate, you know, the best potential individuals to lead us for the next, in my case, the next couple of years.
That's terrific. Well, that's a great way to end the broadcast. But thank you again, Assemblymember. What a pleasure. Assemblyman Nader Sayers, representing the 90th District, which is comprised totally of the city of Yonkers, which is fantastic. And that's about 85% of the city, isn't it?
you know, Yonkers grew the last decade from number four, where number three in the state. And historically, Assemblyman Preflow had part of South and Southwest Yonkers. And recently, because of the increase in population, Assemblyman Abenanti, who's leaving office this year, and hopefully Assemblywoman Shamsky would be the new Assemblywoman. She'll have a little piece of Northwest Yonkers, but the rest of Yonkers is in my district. So I'm the only Assemblyman that truly represents Yonkers fully. I mean, that's my main agenda, and it really doesn't matter. Represent the entire city when it comes to our concerns and issues and constituent services. It's Yonkers.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for your time. Most appreciated. Enjoy the weekend, and all the best to you, sir, and your family.
As you
stay
much
healthy.
Always. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. There we have it, folks. None other than New York State Assembly member Benita Sayers. He represents the 90th Assembly District, which is comprised 85% of it is Yonkers. And that's a story. So hope you enjoyed that. Well, we have some breaking news. The ex-Trump advisor, Steve Bannon, has been sentenced to 4 months in prison for contempt of Congress. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon has been sentenced to 4 months in prison for each count running concurrently in the contempt of Congress case, stemming from his refusal to comply with a House January 6th committee subpoena. So the judge has levied a $6,500 fine. So it goes. We'll see how all this works out, but it's compelling news. Amazing. We'll see where all of this stuff goes. Unbelievable. Now let's just look at some other news on the world stage. Bear with me a moment. One moment here. Here's the latest update with respect to Ukraine. Deadly Ukraine strikes hit civilian crossing near the Kherson Bridge, and Russia has backed officials. Russia-backed officials, so say that. So at least two people have been killed and 10 more wounded after Ukrainian missile strikes hit a civilian crossing near the Antonivsky Bridge in Kherson late Thursday, according to the southern region's Russian-appointed chairman. Quote, unfortunately today after 11 p.m., the armed forces of Ukraine inflicted a strike on the civilian crossing, said Sergei Elisev on Telegram, adding the civilians were on the crossing at that time of night, quote, because a lot of residents in Kherson region wish to leave the territory to survive the aggravation of the military situation, end quote. Well, Elisev said he went to the scene of the strikes and later to the regional hospital where the injured had been taken with shrapnel wounds and head injuries. The Russian-backed Kherson region administration said on its Telegram channel that Ukraine's military, quote, fired 12 HIMARS at the civilian crossing near the Antonivsky Bridge, which also operates at night due to the large number of people wishing to travel to the left bank of the Dnipro River. Ukraine's military is yet to comment, so we'll see where that goes. And we'll see where that what happens there. This is very interesting. I sent him bottles of Lambrusco, Italy's Berlusconi boast about friendship with Putin in leaked audio. Well, it seems former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi sparked controversy this week when audio released by Italian news agency La Presse revealed the 86-year-old speaking about his reestablished, quote-unquote, relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Now, Berlusconi says in the audio that Putin sent him 20 bottles of vodka and a, quote, very sweet letter on his birthday last month. his office confirmed with CNN on Thursday that the clips were authentic, apparently having been secretly recorded during a meeting of Berlusconi's Forza Italia party in the parliamentary chamber on Tuesday. Quote, I send a bottle of Lambrusco Italian sparkling wine and an equally sweet letter, Berlusconi says in the La Presse audio clip. He also says he had, quote, reestablished relations with President Putin, end quote, and goes on to boast that the Russian leader called him the first of his five true friends, end quote. A party spokesperson denied Berlusconi was in touch with Putin, saying the former prime minister had been telling parliamentarians, an old story referring to an episode many years ago. It's amazing the way the news works. However, in the La Presse, Presse audio, Berlusconi can be heard saying Putin was, quote, against any initiative for war against Ukraine. Well, the comments have raised eyebrows among Ukraine watchers, as Berlusconi is expected to be part of Italy's incoming coalition government led by the ultra-conservative Giorgia Meloni, who has been steadfast in her support for Ukraine. So we'll see what goes on there. It would be interesting. Biden says he's concerned for the future of U.S. aid to Ukraine if the GOP wins the House. Well, President Joe Biden on Thursday seized on recent comments from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, calling into question future Ukraine aid, framing the position as undermining the U.S. role and leadership in an increasingly volatile world. Quote, they said that if they win, they're not likely to fund to help continue to fund Ukraine, the Ukrainian war against the Russians, Biden said at a fundraiser in Philadelphia for Pennsylvania Senate candidate John Fetterman, according to the press pool. These guys don't get it. It's a lot bigger than Ukraine. It's Eastern Europe. It's NATO. It's real, serious consequential outcomes. They have no sense of American foreign policy, end quote. Earlier in the day, as Biden and Fetterman dropped by a Primanti Brothers sandwich shop near Pittsburgh, he similarly told reporters of future aid, yeah, I'm worried about that because they said they'll cut it. So, unbelievable. Well, another thing that's been going on in the world stage, seems the White House says that Iran sent personnel to Crimea. One second here. Sorry. So the White House says that Iran sent personnel to Crimea to train Russians to use drones. The White House says that Iranian military personnel have visited Crimea to assist with Russian operations targeting civilian infrastructure in Ukraine using drones. John Kirby, the communications coordinator at the National Security Council, said that the presence of Iranian personnel was evidence of Tehran's direct engagement in the conflict. Quote, we can confirm that Russian military personnel that are based in Crimea have been piloting Iranian UAVs, using them to conduct strikes across Ukraine, including strikes against Kyiv, Kirby said, referring to unmanned aerial vehicles. CNN previously reported that Iranian military personnel had been sent to Crimea to train Russian forces. Quote, Iranian military personnel were on the ground in Crimea and assisted with these operations, he said. Russia has received dozens of UAVs so far and will likely continue to receive additional shipments in the future. The U.S. has said before that Russia has obtained drones from Iran, but has not previously disclosed that Iranian personnel are on the ground assisting in using the weapons. Well, the UK sanctions Iran over kamikaze Russian drones used in Ukraine. Well, the United Kingdom is slapping new sanctions on Iran for supplying Russia with kamikaze drones used to bombard Ukraine. British Foreign Ministry Secretary James Cleverly had said. In a statement, Cleverly accused Iran of warmongering by profiting from Russia's abhorrent attacks on Ukrainian citizens and adding to the suffering of the people and the destruction of critical infrastructure. The new sanctions match measures agreed to by the European Union on Thursday, targeting three individuals and one business responsible for providing drones to Moscow. Subject to asset freezes and travel bans are Major General Mohammad Hossein Bahari, the chairman of the Armed Forces General Staff, Brigadier General Sayed Hajatollah Qureshi, the key Iranian negotiator in the deal that has provided Russia with the Iranian-produced drones, and Brigadier General Saeed Ahjani, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, a branch of the Iranian Armed Forces. The one entity, Aerospace Force UAV Command, reported to have been in the temporarily controlled territories of Ukraine, advising Russian forces on how to use the drones, is also subject to asset freeze. More context, Iran has denied supplying weapons to Russia despite evidence to the contrary. CNN reported on Tuesday that Iran has sent military personnel to Russian-occupied territory inside Crimea to train and advise the Russian military on the use of their drones, according to two sources familiar with U.S. intelligence. Well, a spokesperson for the Iranian mission at the United Nations said that Iran does not confirm this claim and rejects it. Well, these cowardly drones strikes are an act of desperation. By enabling these strikes, these individuals and a manufacturer have caused the people of Ukraine untold suffering. We will ensure that they are held to account for their actions, Cleverly had said. Well, Russia's military is focused on holding off the southern counteroffensive, Ukraine says. A senior Ukrainian official says that Russian forces' task number one, quote-unquote, is to hold the southern front line. The Russians are digging in and sending more resources in hopes of holding off the Ukrainian forces pushing toward Kherson, said Oleksiy Romov, top official with the military's general staff. Quote, the enemy plans to fulfill this task with the help of the first wave of the partial mobilization and by increasing the number of their troops on the west bank of the Dnipro River, he said, referring to a key waterway where fighting has recently taken place on both banks. Romov suggested that there were now more than 40 Russian battalion tactical groups in the Kherson region. Each group usually comprises some 1,000 personnel. So the question is why this region is key. For Putin's regime, the south direction, Kherson, Zaporizhia, and Mykolaiv, has strategic meaning from the point of view of preserving the land corridor to Crimea and water supply to the peninsula, as well as creating a future bridgehead for the capture in Mykolaiv and Odessa regions, depriving Ukraine of the status of a maritime state, Romov had said. In his own statement, the Russian-owned head of Crimea stressed the region's importance to Moscow and its appointed leaders in occupied Ukraine. Our common position is that the protection of Kherson region will ensure the security of the Republic of Crimea. And to that end, we will continue to take all necessary measures, including providing maximum assistance to the troops and law enforcement units on the front lines, Sergei Aksenov said on Thursday. Well, the Ukrainian military sees a growing risk of Russia reopening a northern front from Belarus, officials had said. A senior Ukrainian military official says there is growing danger that Russia will open a new front in the war through its coordination with Belarus, using it to cut military supplies to Ukraine. Quote, the threat of the Russian armed forces resuming the offensive on the northern front is growing, Oleksiy Romov, a senior official in the military's general staff, said at a news conference in Kyiv. Quote, this time, the direction of the offensive may be changed to the western part of the Belarusian-Ukrainian border to cut the main logistics arteries of supplying weapons and military equipment to Ukraine from partner countries. Voromov said that Ukraine's defense forces were, quote, taking measures to ensure reliable coverage of the state border of Ukraine and the city of Kyiv from the northern direction, in case the enemy decides to open the so-called second front, namely to conduct offensive actions from the Republic of Belarus, we will be ready for an adequate response. For more background, Belarusian authorities have denied any plans for mobilization and have held a high number of training and readiness exercises this year and recently announced a joint force with Russian troops. The last time Belarusian and Russian forces held joint exercises was in February. Many of those Russian forces went on to cross the Ukrainian border in their ill-fated drive toward the capital. Well, Ukraine and Belarus share a 1,000-kilometer, that's about 620-mile frontier, much of it sparsely populated and thickly forested. Belarus did not have a mighty army in numbers, but the prospect of the long northern border again becoming a passageway for Russian forces would be a nightmare for Ukraine's already stretched forces, then to have been extended to three eastern regions of Ukraine. Ukraine's state energy company has been forced to extend its temporary electricity restriction to three eastern regions as the nation continues to grapple with limited supply. Kharkiv, Sumy, and Poltava were added to the list of areas under a temporary controlled restriction. According to Ukrenergo, the energy agency, the company said earlier on Thursday that it had been forced to implement restrictions on electricity use in the capital of Kyiv and other central regions because of high energy demand there. Ihor Taburets, the head of the Cherkasy Regional Military Administration, said that the emergency power outages were needed to stabilize the country's power grid. The electricity supply to, quote, socially important facilities, end quote, would be maintained, he added. Remember, the days of devastating Russian attacks on energy infrastructure have caused the nation to lose at least 40% of its power generating capacity. Ukrainian officials warned earlier this week that both emergency and scheduled blackouts would continue and would follow. The European Union agrees on new Iran sanctions over the drones, says the European Union presidency. Well, European Union members have agreed on new sanctions against Iran over supplying drones that have been used to attack Ukraine, the Czech presidency of the European Union said on Thursday, quote, European Union ambassadors agreed on measures against entities supplying Iranian drones that hit Ukraine, end quote, the president said on Twitter, adding that the sanctions will come into force on Thursday afternoon. European Union states decided to freeze the assets of three individuals and one entity responsible for drone deliveries, end quote. The European Union is, quote, also prepared to extend sanctions to four more Iranian entities that are already featured in a previous sanctions list, it concluded. Iran has repeatedly denied supplying Russia with weapons for use in Ukraine, saying last week that it has not and will not do so. Yet on Wednesday, European Union spokeswoman Nabila Masrali said the bloc had, quote, sufficient evidence, end quote, to sanction Iran in relation to supplying drones to Russia, which are believed to have been used against Ukraine. Earlier this week, the Ukrainian Defense Ministry said a total of 37 Iranian Shahed 136 drones and three cruise missiles launched by Russia were shot down overnight on Sunday and on Monday. So that's part of what's going on. I'm running out of juice for some crazy reason, and I don't know what's causing that problem, but I'm down to like about 9% at the moment. So what's going to happen is that we may cut off early today, and we'll see what happens. Supreme Court delivers one of two legal wins for Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. Well, CNN reports that federal courts on Thursday delivered two wins for President Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett rejected a challenge to the program brought by a Wisconsin taxpayers group, and on the same day, a federal district court judge rejected a separate lawsuit brought by six Republican-led states. Student loan cancellations worth up to $20,000 per eligible borrower should show up on the borrower's accounts as soon as Sunday. Lawyers for the government agreed in court documents to hold off on discharging any debt before October 23rd as it faces several legal challenges. The appeal at issue in the Supreme Court case was considered an uphill battle because lower courts had ruled that the group, the Brown County Taxpayers Association, did not have the legal right or standing, quote unquote, to bring the challenge. Under normal circumstances, taxpayers don't have a general right to sue the government over how it uses taxpayer funds. Barrett acted alone because she has jurisdiction over the lower court that ruled on the case. She declined to refer the matter to the full court. Her denial appeared as a single sentence on the court's docket. Federal judge in Missouri, U.S. District Judge Henry Edward Autry, rejected the lawsuit from the GOP-led states, also because the plaintiff did not have the legal standing to bring the challenge. Plaintiffs in that case had asked the judge to put student loan cancellation on hold until issuing a final ruling on the case. Now, the lawsuit was filed in a federal court in Missouri last month by state attorneys general for Missouri, Arkansas, Kansas, Nebraska, and South Carolina, as well as legal representatives from Iowa. The states have filed an appeal, sending the case to the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, where it is likely to face a panel of conservative judges. The Biden administration is also facing lawsuits from Arizona Attorney General Mark Ronovich and conservative groups such as the Job Creators Network Foundation and the Cato Institute. Many of the legal challenges claim that the Biden administration does not have the legal authority to broadly cancel student loan debt. Lawyers for the government argue that Congress gave the Secretary of Education the power to discharge debt in a 2003 law known as the HEROES Act. Although dismissed by one federal judge, the legal challenge filed by the six states is widely seen as one of the most formidable challenges making its way through the courts. It is a, quote, most plausible legal challenge to the Biden Jubilee, end quote, said Luke Herrin, an assistant law professor at the University of Alabama, previously worked on a legal strategy pushing for student debt cancellation in a tweet on Thursday. Well, the Biden administration's program for loan forgiveness program, first announced in August, aims to deliver debt relief to millions of borrowers before federal student loan payments resume in January after a nearly three-year pandemic-related pause. While the application officially opened on Monday, the Biden administration has agreed in court documents to hold off on canceling any debt until October 23rd. Once processing begins, most qualifying borrowers are expected to receive debt relief within weeks. Under Biden's plan, eligible individual borrowers who earned less than $125,000 in either 2020 or 2021 and married couples or heads of households who made less than $250,000 annually in those years will see up to $10,000 of their federal tax loan debt forgiven. If a qualifying borrower also received a federal Pell Grant while enrolled in college, the individual is eligible for up to $20,000 of debt relief or forgiveness. So that's the latest stuff. Bear with me a moment. One second here. Okay. One split second.
3 years.
1 minute here. One second here because I'm looking at some other stuff that's going on. Bear with me a moment. All right, 1 second. All right, 1 second here. I'm just gonna see what else is going on in the world stage. Right, give me a moment. This, I think, you'll find very interesting. This is, it comes from the desk of Secretary Antony J. Blinken, who is the U.S. Department of State. This week, he writes, I attended the grand opening of the Philadelphia Passport Agency's new location in the renovated Robert N.C. Nix Sr. Federal Building. Our colleagues have worked on-site throughout the pandemic, and this past year, they helped issue more passports than any other year in history. I was also proud to stand alongside 25 of our newest U.S. citizens in Philadelphia as they embraced their new rights and responsibilities as Americans. I invited them to apply for their first U.S. passport and even had the opportunity to hand deliver one. Read my remarks during my trip to Philadelphia below. Well, 235 years ago, in a hole about a half a mile from the Philadelphia Passport Agency, a group of farmers, scholars, and statesmen launched an unprecedented experiment in democracy. 1787, as a leading port city, Philadelphia already reflected the incredibly rich tapestry of immigrants, Dutch and German settlers escaping religious persecution, British, Scottish, and Irish workers seeking new opportunities in overseas trade. In the coming centuries, they'd be joined by many others, Cuban and Chinese in the 19th century, Italian, Polish, Filipino, and Russian at the start of the 20th, Greek, Korean, and Japanese in the years after World War II, and in recent decades, people from Vietnam and Haiti, among many others. This city, Philadelphia, like America as a whole, has always been built and enriched by immigrants. Today, we mark another chapter in that profound history as we welcome fellow citizens of democracy that we share. This is a joyous moment. We're able to conduct this naturalization ceremony in this remarkable building, the renovated Robert Nelson Cornelius Nix Sr. Federal Building. It happens to be the new site of our Philadelphia Passport Agency, and that's the result of incredibly hard work by many of the people who are in this room and outside of it. So to everyone who spent a few years working on this project, from conception to construction, the architects, the designers, the conservationists, the project managers, so many others, thank you. We're joined by several elected officials from across the city, across the tri-state area, members of Congress, friends and colleagues. Thank you for being part of this. I want to take advantage of this moment just to do a little further advertising because the State Department is also undertaking other initiatives, redesigning our passports with stronger security measures to deter fraud, making our policies more inclusive so that all people can travel with documents that truly reflect their identities. There was a time when it was required to physically paste the photographs inside passports with glue. Things have changed just a little bit since then. We're joined by several family members of Representative Nix, to whom this new passport facility is named. The son of a former slave, he was the first black person to be elected to represent the city of Philadelphia in Congress. He served the city's residents from 1956 to 1979, and during that time, he served on multiple committees, including the Post Office and Civil Service Committee and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman Nix as a founding member of the Congressional Black Caucus, pushed for passage and the landmark legislation on civil rights, including introducing a measure to end racial discrimination in the armed forces and later supporting key voting rights legislation. Across each of these efforts, he tried to make a country that hadn't always treated him equally a little bit more equal. Through his actions, Representative Nix worked to make sure that the first words of our Constitution, a phrase that I suspect everyone in this group knows pretty well by now, from our naturalization test, we the people, quote unquote, extended their promise to more Americans. And throughout his life, he dedicated himself to the idea that the story of America is one of growth, of inclusion, of constant renewal from within. Each and every one of you, soon to be U.S. citizens, embodies that renewal. This is what makes our country strong. You arrived in America from almost every corner of the world, vastly different backgrounds, different perspectives, different journeys. As a journalist in Belarus, Hannah worked with activists to cover human rights violations that were happening in Belarus. She was persecuted for her words, escaped to the United States. Today, she and her husband, a registered nurse from Macedonia, are proudly homeowners in Delaware next door. Jimmy, trained as a civil engineer in Honduras, came to the United States when the company that he was working for transferred him here to Philadelphia. His work was so indispensable that the company eventually petitioned for him to stay in the United States. He now lives in Delaware with his wife, Melissa, who teaches Spanish at a private school. Soon came to the United States to attend graduate school, after which he planned to return home to South Korea to become a software engineer. Along the way, he fell in love with another immigrant, his future wife, who came from China to study in the United States. They now live with their two children, ages 9 and 5, just outside of Philadelphia. The urge to do better for yourself, to do better for your family, to be part of something bigger than any one person or family, that's something that shaped my life as well. My grandfather, my father's father, Maurice Blinken, found refuge in America after fleeing pogroms in the turn of the century in Russia. My stepmother, Vera Blinken, found refuge in America after fleeing the communists in her native Hungary. And my late stepfather, Samuel Pisar, ultimately found a home in America after enduring the horrors of the Holocaust. He was liberated from a concentration camp by an American GI. He repaid the gift by dedicating his own life to advocating for human rights and trying to find common ground among former adversaries. In 1961, he became a citizen of the United States, and here's what he used to say to me and to other members of our family. You are an American by happy accidents of birth. I am an American by choice. Each of you has made the same choice, and with that decision comes the responsibility borne by every generation of immigrants that have come before you. That of being a citizen, of contributing your ideas, your talent, your energy to your communities. You are now partners in the great unfinished work of making this country better for more than its people, especially those who will come after you. Throughout our nation's history, we have been enriched time and again by the contribution of immigrants and their children. They influence everything from the art that expands our horizon to the scientific advancements that move us forward to the food that we enjoy every single day. Immigrants have launched world-renowned companies from Apple to Google, AT&T and Pfizer. They've been a key source of our national competitiveness. I was in Silicon Valley just a few days ago. More than half of the billion-dollar company produced in Silicon Valley were founded by an immigrant at the State Department. Those with immigrant roots are leading vital parts of our foreign policy every single day. Uzra Zaya, whose family immigrated from India and the United States to the United States in the 1960s, she now helped uphold human rights around the world as our Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights. Julieta Noyes, whose parents fled repression in Cuba. She now helps support persecuted and vulnerable people around the world as our Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. And Sarah Mashzoub, whose parents immigrated from Lebanon, established a successful architectural firm in the United States. She's now one of my closest aides in my office. She's a crucial part of making sure that I'm as well prepared as I can be each and every day. Simply put, we could not do American diplomacy without them and without so many other colleagues who started someplace else and are now here as Americans, and we wouldn't want to. Our foreign policy is stronger, it's more effective because of their service. We come from the most diverse country on earth. We're operating in a world that's incredibly diverse. By definition, this diversity is the source of our strength, and we're not making full use of it. We're shortchanging ourselves, so we're working every day to make sure that we are making full use of our diversity. Here at this passport agency in Philadelphia, there's a mural called The Seeker by Philadelphia-based artist Michelle Angela Ortiz. It depicts three large circles. The first two circles show a host of memories, a girl connecting with her grandmother in Korea, a wedding in Jamaica, postcards from Panama, among many others. And then the third circle shows a young woman, the seeker, who's looking at these memories, which reflect a tiny sampling of the many experiences that the immigrants carry with them from a past land. Looking at these memories as she forges her path in the United States, that's an experience that binds so many of us together in the country, country here. As the paper that she's holding in her hands reads, we become out of many one. I hope that you too carry your past with pride, that you share your experiences from your home countries with your new communities. The diverse tapestry of the countries is enriched by these perspectives, these experiences, by your citizenship, by your very being. So finally and simply put, I want to say thank you. Thank you for choosing us. Thank you for making that choice on behalf of the American people. Let me be one of the first lucky people to say, welcome home, my fellow Americans. Those who have taken the time to write to me in the past several months to share your thoughts, please write to me and my team at email team@state.gov, email team@state.gov. Sincerely, Secretary Antony J. Blinken. Unbelievable. I'm in tears just reading it. It's absolutely mind-boggling, so well said, so heartwarming, so welcoming, so America. What a definition. True definition of America. Unbelievable. Okay. Let's see. We're down to like about 5% power. So we may just be able to make it for all I know to the end of our time slot with you. Now let me quickly look at some more news that you might find interesting. Again, back to Kyiv. Kyiv update. Kyiv warns that Russia plans to destroy a dam. Ukraine claims that Russia has mined a dam at the Kharkovka hydroelectric power plant in the Kherson region. Meanwhile, the United States has said Iranians in Crimea helped Russia target Ukraine with drones. Ukraine has accused Russia of planning to destroy a hydropower plant in the eastern Kherson region, which Moscow has illegally annexed and subjected to martial law. Quote, Russia is preparing a man-made catastrophe, end quote, Mykhailo Podolyak, advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, said on Thursday. Podolyak said that Russia was mining the dam and transformers at the Kharkovka hydroelectric power plant to flood the lower Dnieper River, where Russian troops face a Ukrainian offensive. Earlier on Thursday, Vladimir Leontiev, a Kremlin-installed regional official, said that Ukrainian forces had launched 5 missile strikes against the Kharkovka dam and hydroelectric power station. He told Russian TV that if the facility was destroyed, a crucial canal providing water to annex Crimea would be severed. Zelensky said that Russia had plans to blow up the dam and power station in what seemed a terrorist act to unleash 18 million cubic meters of flood and flood Kherson and dozens of areas that are home to hundreds of thousands of people. Ukrainian president told European leaders that Moscow would then blame Kyiv. Zelensky, in his daily address, said blowing up the dam would be a catastrophe on a grand scale. Well, Russian-installed officials say they are bolstering the defenses of the southern city of Kherson as Kyiv's troops advance nearer. So we'll see what goes on further here. Bear with me a moment as we move on. Bear with me a second here. My goodness, there's so much is going on. Unbelievable. Just quickly look. Okay, we're only about 15 minutes from the top of the hour when we should close normally, but unfortunately we're down to like 4% power, and I'm going to need that power in order to resuscitate the system here. So I want to thank you for being with us, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend. Stay in good health. Take care of one another, because that's all we have. We have each other. And I hope to speak to you on Monday. All the best. Goodbye.